Chrissy, are we ready?
That's a fun note.
And welcome, everyone, as I open today's meeting of the House Revenue Committee. We have a special guest to give us a report today. Mason, you want to tell us about it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as we were talking yesterday, today we would receive the report from the Highway Cost Allocation Study. The Highway Cost Allocation Study, as we mentioned yesterday, has been in law under the authority of the Office of Economic Analysis. So we have today with us State Economist Tom Petersky, and along with him Carl Burton, who comes from Echo Northwest, is the primary consultant that did the study for us, and they will go through the study and tell us the results, and then we would have to talk about what we need to do, if we need to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Madam Chair, members of the House Revenue Committee, for the record, my name is Tom Petowski, State Economist with the Office of Economic Analysis, and Chair of our study review team to conduct the Highway Cost Allocation Study for 2005. I'll just go right into the first slide. The first study was conducted back in 1937. Oregon has a long history of conducting highway cost allocation studies. And as Mazin mentioned, since 1999 in the state constitution, we're required to conduct this study once every 2 years. And the main question in the forefront is, are the shares of revenues paid by light and heavy vehicles fair and proportionate to their shares of costs? And Carl will directly address that question. So the people involved in this study, we are the overseers of the study through the Department of Administrative Services, the Office of Economic Analysis. The main contractor was Econ Northwest and other associates, as you can see there. We also had some academic experts as reviewers of the study. And then we also had a project manager involved. And ODOT staff were instrumental in providing us with information to conduct the study. The study review team, a very integral role here. This is made up of experts and stakeholders in the process and the outcome of the highway cost allocation study. As you can see the members there, we have two academic members, Jim Lundy and Chris Monser, both engineers from academia, and then other stakeholders, AAA of Oregon, Oregon Trucking Association, Oregon Automobile Dealers Association, and then also members of Legislative Revenue Office and ODOT. And as I said, they're very instrumental because not only are they experts, but they provide guidance for the study. But I have to emphasize that their role is in terms of experts and in guidance. The study itself is the responsibility of the consultant, and our job as overseers to make sure that it is as scientific of the study as possible.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carl Batten. I'm with Echo Northwest, and we were the prime contractor on this project. First of all, I'll try to give a very quick explanation of what highway cost allocation is. It's an attempt to answer the question, do various categories of highway users pay user fees in proportion to the costs they impose on the highway system? And to answer that question, you have to go through several steps. To define the user classes, allocate costs to the user classes, attribute revenues to the user classes, and then compare the share of costs to the share of revenues. And the way we do that is by calculating what we call an equity ratio, which is the share of revenue contributed by a particular user class divided by the share of cost allocated to that class. So if a user class is paying just the right amount of money in proportion to the costs they impose, their equity ratio will be 1.0. If their equity ratio is higher than 1, they're paying more than their share. If it's lower than 1, they're paying less than their share. The way highway cost allocation is done in Oregon is very similar to the way it's done at the federal level. The costs to allocate are actually the expenditures over the upcoming biennium. So it's a 2-year study looking ahead 2 years. The expenditures of federal funds are also included in the study. And the reason we do that is that the way funds are spent, that federal funds are mostly interchangeable with state funds. So any particular project could be funded by federal dollars or state dollars. And at the time we're doing the study, in advance of the project actually being done, we don't know for sure how it's going to be funded. If the ODOT has an accounting system where they plan on how they want to do it, but it can change between the time we do it and the time the project is done. So since these funds are interchangeable, we put them all together and look at them as a pool. We also include the expenditures by local governments of the state user fees, because a portion of the state user fees goes directly to local governments to spend on their roads. And we look at the expenditures by the local governments of federal and some of their own source funds, because those are also interchangeable with the state funds. We excluded part of the local government's own source funds in this study, where we were able to identify that they were not really interchangeable with state funds, and those were the local government revenues from system development charges, traffic impact fees, the bonds they issued themselves, and property taxes such as local improvement districts. And Chapter 2 of the report describes the structure of the report and provides more detail on all of these. Expenditures on bond finance projects at the state level are reduced to the amount of bond payments that will be made within the biennium. And this became particularly relevant in this study with OTO 1, 2, and 3 bond issues coming into play. So about 16% of the expenditures on projects that are funded through the bonds are counted in the study. And then for the next 9 studies, that same dollar amount from this study will be carried forward. We started that in the prior study, the study for the 03-05 biennium. So this study contains, as cost, money that was actually spent in the current biennium for unbonded projects. And there's more detail in Chapter 3 of the report. This little picture attempts to show how we dealt with the bond finance projects. The dark blue area at the top represents the bonded expenditures from the prior, from the 03-05 biennium, and it gets divided out into 10 biennia worth of, or 20 years worth of repayment amounts, which add up to about 1.6 times the total amount that spent. And the first of those was included in the 03-05 study. Then the next dark blue area represents the 05-07 expenditure of bond money. And the first block from it is included in the 05 study. And as are one block worth of the, one gray block worth of the 03 studies allocated expenditures. In the Oregon study, bridge costs are allocated with the incremental approach, which is where you look at the cost of building a bridge that can hold only basic vehicles, and you share that cost among all vehicles. Then you look at the cost of building a bridge that can hold a heavier set of vehicles, and you share the additional cost of that increment with only vehicles above the basic level, and you do that in for as many increments as you want to. In this study, we used the results of a study by Oregon Bridge Engineering Consultants that was performed in 2002, and they used 4 increments. The wear-related pavement costs in this study are based on the National Pavement Model, which was adapted to Oregon by Roger Mingo, who was one of our subcontractors, and is updated bridge study with new vehicle and highway data from Oregon. There's a complete list of all of the factors that were used to allocate costs in Chapter 3 of the report. Not every vehicle in a particular class pays the full fee levels. So we have to deal with the alternative fee paying vehicles, and which is almost the same thing as dealing with subsidies. There are some alternative fees that are just different and not necessarily lower than the regular fees. So what we do is we calculate the difference between what alternative fee paying vehicles actually do pay and what they would pay if they were paying the regular fee schedule. And that difference is then allocated to weight classes as a cost in proportion to the VMT by full fee-paying vehicles in each weight class. And there's a better explanation of that in Chapter 3 of the report as well. There are a number of important issues in this study. Three of the most important were replacement bridges. The OTIA money is a large part of it is going towards replacing bridges, and in the federal highway cost allocation study they treated replacement bridges differently than new bridges. We studied that issue and discussed it in the study review team, and there's an issue paper that hasn't been published yet, but will be an appendix to the report you've got today. The decision that was made for this study was to treat replacement bridges the same as new bridges. Another important issue was the expenditure of revenues other than state user fees. In the prior study, all state, federal, and local revenues were the expenditures of all those were allocated, and in this study we did some additional research and got some help from the Association of Oregon Counties and the local governments, and were able to refine that approach a little bit and exclude some of the local government's own source funding. And then the other big issue was the bond finance projects. The reason it's a big issue is because in Oregon, the highway cost allocation studies in the past have always looked only at the expenditures that are made in the upcoming biennium and have always allocated the entire amount of those expenditures, whether it's for something that will be used up within the upcoming biennium or whether it's for something that's going to last for the next 100 years. When you introduce the bond financing, some of the assumptions behind that prior approach aren't quite as good anymore. And what the study review team decided to do was to allocate only the portion represented by the amount of the bonds that's going to be paid back within the upcoming biennium, and then to carry forward that same amount to the next 9 studies and to freeze the allocation that was arrived at in this study when carrying that forward into the next ones. The results of the 2005 study for basic vehicles, which is any vehicle under 8,000 pounds, we expect that there will be 33.5 billion miles traveled by those vehicles in each year of the 2-year period, which is 92.5% of all vehicle miles that will be traveled each year, and that 32.9 billion of those will be by full fee-paying vehicles, or 93.2% of all full fee-paying vehicle miles. We found a $975 million annual cost responsibility for basic vehicles, $958 million of that by full fee-paying vehicles, or 66.1% of all cost responsibility by full fee-paying vehicles. We expect that they'll pay $541 million in user fees, of which $533 million will be by full fee-paying vehicles, or 66.6%. And there was a $13 million share of the subsidy given to basic vehicles, which is the 93.2 that comes from their share of the full fee-paying BMP in the first bullet up there. So that when you add together their allocated share of the subsidy and the costs attributed, or the $546 million, which results in a 1.003 equity ratio. The heavy vehicles, those over 8,000 pounds, are expected to travel 2.7 billion miles each year, or 7.6% of the total, and 2.4 billion of those are by full fee-paying vehicles. They're expected to impose $538 million in costs, and $491 million of those by full fee-paying vehicles. They're expected to pay $277 million in annual state user fees, $267 million of those by full fee-paying vehicles, and they get a little less than $1 million share of the subsidy, which brings them up to $492 million of cost-plus subsidy. And they end up with a 0.994 equity ratio. So the equity ratios for light and heavy vehicles, given the expected travel and user fee and current law user fees, are essentially 1.0. But when you look at the individual weight classes within heavy vehicles, you find a range between 0.54 and 1.39. In general, vehicles between 8,001 and 26,000 pounds are overpaying their fair share. Most vehicles between 26,001 and 78,000 pounds are underpaying their fair share. The 78,001 to 80,000 pound weight class, which is 42% of all BMT over 8,000 pounds, and well over half of the weight mile tax vehicle miles, are overpaying. They have a 1.06 equity ratio. And then most vehicles over 80,000 pounds are underpaying. The full details for every weight class are presented in Chapter 6 of the report. One of the things we're supposed to do is come up with recommended changes in rates. Because the equity ratios are so close to 1, it's not necessary to change any rates. The adjustments that were made as part of OTIA 3 look like they'll result in a fair split between light and heavy vehicles. But if someone wanted to increase the equity within heavy vehicles, Chapter 7 of the report describes a revenue-neutral set of changes to the rate structures that would significantly improve equity within heavy vehicles by lowering the registration fees for 8 to 26,000 pound vehicles, raising the rates for the lowest weights within Table A of the weight mile tax, and lowering it for the 78 to 80,000 pound vehicles, and generally raising Table B rates, especially for the heaviest five-axle vehicles, and raising the road use assessment fees charged to vehicles carrying non-divisible loads over 98,000 pounds.
Are you done?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Batten, thank you very much. Questions?
Yeah, I have several, Madam Chair. I'm just kind of curious, couple questions I have, Carl. The first one is, how do you determine annual miles? I mean, it's not that people come in DMV and say, well, this is what I traveled this last year, or this is what my odometer reading is, or anything, but I'm just curious.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, the ODOT prepares a forecast of vehicle miles traveled that they use in their own revenue forecasting and for other purposes. And for the light vehicles, they rely on forecasted fuel sales and information they have from prior fuel sales and national models of fuel consumption by light vehicles. For the heavier vehicles, the weight mile tax vehicles do report the miles they travel in Oregon, and they rely on that data, and then they project the mileage by farm trucks and others that don't pay the weight mile tax or the road use assessment fee.
Okay. Yeah, so I've got a series of questions.
Yeah, by all means.
Thank you. The you shared a lot of data in just a short time.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I'm curious, how do you determine the difference between what a light vehicle is and that of a heavy vehicle? I mean, I understand that PUC sets their weight limit at 26,000 pounds. So why the 8,000?
I guess it's the distinction, as I understand it, and we didn't set that limit. It's been used in prior studies as far back as I've read them. The distinction, I think, is between cars and trucks, and it's a distinction that used to be a little more clear than it is now, where cars were well under 8,000 pounds and trucks were generally more than 8,000 pounds. But cars and pickup trucks and SUVs and what are considered basic vehicles are generally all under 8,000 pounds. And there is a distinction in the law for registering vehicles where you do a different type of registration for the over 8,000 pound vehicles. You do a truck registration, even though you don't pay the weight mile tax.
Okay. Then also, you mentioned that some vehicles do overpay. Do they receive any type of adjustment then for that?
No, this is the conclusion we reached looking at the current law rates. And that's just what we forecast that they would be paying in relation to their costs. It's not a matter of overpaying what they owe. It's that what they owe exceeds the cost they impose.
Okay.
No more?
Yeah, I'll stop.
Yeah. If you recall yesterday when Mazin sat down, he said he wasn't going to get into Schedule B. And I think this is part of Schedule B, is it not, Mazin? If we were to adjust this overpayment, or it would be messing with Schedule B.
Madam Chair, the recommendation here is to increase Table B. But let me just clarify something here in order to be able to make a distinction between what the constitutional legal requirement is versus the rest of the recommendation. The constitutional requirement says that legislature needs to see the heavy and light including cars and heavy including trucks, and see if that split is proportional, which means below and above 8,000 pounds. What this report is saying in a different way, that this split is okay, and no need for changing of revenue. The further recommendations that the consultants have, this is in order to ensure equity within the heavy class. Now, that is not necessarily part of the delegated constitutional responsibility, but if one wants to get into this finer adjustments between within the class itself, then that would be.
Then we'd be, it's good. We'd be talking about. So do you understand that, members of the committee? I know that you have not been through this before. I think 1.003 and 0.994 is close enough to 1 and 1 that I think we're, I don't know how you get much closer than that. in terms of the ratio between the allocations for the heavy and the allocations for the light.
How does that compare to previous? Do we not have a...
It's in the report. I'm just
okay.
I'm sorry. I haven't read it yet. I have to be honest.
Okay, you want to use mine?
Is that 6-2 call on page 6-5?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exhibit 6-2. That would put since 1999 what the difference is we have here. So if you look at the, under the year 2005 under that column, you would see that 1 to 8,000 pound is 1.0032. Previously in 2003 it was 0.9921.
Oh,
and in 2001 it was 1.0027. 99.9700. So in 99 it was, you know, most was out of out of whack.
There's no context for the numbers, so.
Yes, yes, and it's a fair question. It sounds pretty close to me, yeah. But how does it compare to other previous? Other questions, Representative Wiley?
So, Madam Chair, as I understand it, this we are not required to do anything because this meets close enough constitutional requirement. But we could, if we so desire, reallocate within the heavy.
If there was, yes, but we're not required to by this constitutional requirement. But we are required to hear this numbers and have this study every year. Yes.
I have a question of you, Madam Chair. This research project, I mean, I'm reading the front page, couple pages for information on it. Is this driven as a result of federal government requiring us to do this?
No, our own requirements require us to do this. It is.
Driven?
Yeah.
Is this a little play there?
Further questions of these gentlemen?
Thank you
very, very much. Appreciate this. We'll study up, and I'm sure we'll own it all. You'll pass this next week, and we'll be able to peel this off.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anything else?
That's what we have on the schedule, Madam Chair, and... you want to discuss more about this?
No, unless there's further questions, I think not. There was on our agenda the possible introduction of a committee bill. I think I will hold that over until our chair and full committee is here. Okay? With that, I will adjourn today's meeting of the House Revenue